purpose of a tinus is not to inflict pain on ourselves, even though very often we feel that way when we're fasting. The Rambam in Hilchot Taniyot speaks about the two types of taniyot. He begins with the main kind, which is when something wrong is happening in the present. And the Rambam explains that the reason we are commanded to respond to bad things with reflection is because when bad things happen, they happen for a reason. They happen because they're trying to get us to see what we need to fix about ourselves. Halacha bet. V'davar zeh midarkei hatshuva hu. And when bad things happen, we should cry out, we should realize that it's because of something we're doing wrong, and we should fix whatever it is we're doing wrong. Rambam continues in Halacha Gimel, if we don't cry out, we just say, these things happen, bad things happen all the time. This is the way of insensitivity, harezu derech hachzariyut, and it causes people to continue doing the things they're doing wrong, and it brings further suffering. So that's very understandable when we deal with something happening in the present. There's a tragedy in the present, so then we should think about what we're doing wrong in the present. The question is, what about the days like Asara B'Tevet that are commemorating things that happened in the past? What does that have to do with us? So the Rambam writes in Perakei that the days we fast because of the past are Kedei la'orer halevavot v'liftoach darkei tshuva, also meant to bring us to tshuva. Why? How? V'yihyeze zikaron l'maaseinu hara'im u'maasei avoteinu she'haya k'maaseinu ata ad shegaram lahem v'lanu otan atzarot. The Rambam has an interesting way of meshing, of interweaving the present with the past. Something bad happened in the past. If it hasn't been fixed yet, it's because whatever led to that result still exists. So when we commemorate things that happened in the past that continue to plague us today, it's because whatever problems existed in the past continue today. And therefore the Tanis is a zikaron lema'asenu haroim u'ma'aseh avoteinu she'haya k'ma'asenu ata ad shegaram lahem v'lanu otan atzarot. So in other words, we have to try and see how the bad things that happened in the past are still happening today, and how the common cause continues. And of course, I think the Rambam is building off of the famous Yerushalmi we're all familiar with, which asks why we continue to fast for the Churban. And it says that kol dor she'enu nivne beit mikdash biyamav ma'alin alav kehilu hu echrivo. If we would have fixed, if we would be worthy for the Beit Mikdash to exist in our days, it would exist in our days. If it doesn't exist in our days, it's because we still have a problem. Rabbi Davis, I have a seat for you right next to me here. Please, Vinny will sit there. Rabbi Davis is Vinny for those who are alumni. Vinny Davis here, Rabbi Davis from England. Chigwell with us, and we're happy to have him with us. Do we have sheets for Rabbi Davis? Are there extra sheets bouncing around? I made 40 copies. There aren't 40 people in the room, so we have extras there? Okay. Well, the Yom is passing up the extras, so Shekoch. Okay. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, what was Asara B'Teves then, and what is Asara B'Teves still now? And I believe that when we say that what existed in the past continues today, it's even more true about Asara B'Teves than other Taniyos. I'd like to show you what I mean. Okay, so let's begin by understanding what is the basis of Asara B'Teves. So the first interesting thing to note is that according to many Rishonim, Asara B'Teves is uniquely chamor beyond the other Taniyot, even beyond Tisha B'Av. What do I mean? If you look at the bottom of page 1, it says in Yecheskel, Yecheskel says that Hashem spoke to him on Asara B'Teves, B'chodesh Asiri B'Asara L'Chodesh, and he was told by Hashem to write down the day, K'tov L'cha at Shem Hayom et Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Samach Melech Bavel Yerushalayim Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Says twice the term Etzem Hayom Hazeh. What does that mean? It's interesting that the term Etzem Hayom Hazeh appears in the Torah a number of times by Yom Kippur. And therefore the Beis Yosef quotes the Avudraham who says that Asara B'Teves has a chumrah that exists only on Yom Kippur, which is that we fast on the 10th day even if it falls on Shabbat. Think about that. Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbat. Do you fast it on Shabbat? No, you fast it on Sunday. Asara B'Teves, if it falls on Shabbat, do you fast it on Shabbat? Yes. Now the reason you don't remember ever fasting Asara B'Teves on Shabbat is because the calendar is arranged in a way that it never falls on Shabbat. But it does fall on Friday. And Asara B'Teves is the only fast we fast on Friday. Yom Kippur never falls on Friday. If it did, we would. And the obvious question is, more chomer than Tisha B'Av? Asar B'Teves? If I would ask you, of all the Rabban and Tanios, which one is the most chomer? Everyone would say Tisha B'Av. I would say next chomer. No one would say Asar B'Teves, unless you knew this Avudram. In fact, many people forget Asar B'Teves. Right? Shivas V'Tanis, people remember because it's Tisha B'Av, Tanis Esther, it's Purim. Right? Asar B'Teves? Shabbos? Huh? So obviously, we have to understand a little bit more what's going on here. Why do we fast in the month of Tevet? If you look at page 2, Zechariah Perek Chet, he refers to the Tanios in the 4th month, and the 5th month, and the 7th month, and the 10th month. What's the fast in the 4th month? The 4th month. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. What's the fast in the 5th month? The 7th month? Tzom Gedalia. 10th month? Asar B'Teves. Which one doesn't he mention? Tanis Esther may not have existed yet, by the way. It's in the time of Bayis Sheni. They're asking, should we continue fasting now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael? And the answer given by Hashem to Zechariah is that one day there'll be days of celebration. Not yet. Or, I don't know, Yiyah, Lebeit Yehuda, Lesasun, Lesimcha. There's a machlokus, in fact, about whether these days were fasted in Bayis Sheni. The Rambam says it was dependent on people's opinion. It was a middle state. The Tashbitz, though, says it's Pasha they didn't fast in Bayit Sheni because they had the Beis HaMikdash. Question is to what extent these fasts are rooted in the Beis HaMikdash. In any case, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is discussing these psukim. And it starts analyzing each of these dates. Rabbi Shimon, who is the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, which Rabbi Shimon is this, the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva? Shimon Bar Yochai. He says there were four things Rabbi Akiva used to say, and I disagree with. One of them is what Tzom HaAsiri is. Rabbi Akiva said Tzom HaAsiri is Asar B'Teves. What happened on Asar B'Teves, we all know. Melech Bavel laid siege to the walls of Yerushalayim. Later today, after Mincha, we'll be meeting at the front door to have a tour of the walls of Yerushalayim. How appropriate. With Rafi, please bring a Tanakh. After this shir, 12 o'clock, there's the special shir on the Holocaust. We'll soon speak about why. Rashi will give his sicha. It'll be Mincha after Mincha with Rafi Engelhardt. In any case, that's the traditional pshat. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. If you look back at the psukim we saw on the bottom of page 1 from Yecheskel Perek Chof Daled, it mentions there, the 10th day, Samach Melech Bavel Yerushalayim. That's when the siege was laid. Back on page 2, Melachim Bet Perek Chof Hei also mentions that on the 10th of the 10th month, that's when the siege was laid. What's interesting, though, is to see Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Rabbi Shimon, as we mentioned earlier, he disagrees with his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. And he says, Vani, I say it's not the 10th day when the siege was laid, it's the 5th day of Teves, when the news of the Churban got to the Golus, to Bavel. Meaning, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's based on Asar B'Teves before the Churban, when the siege was laid. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's based on the 5th of Teves a year later. It took that amount of time after the Churban, after Tisha B'Av, for the word to get to Bavel about the destruction. In fact, the Gemara says a very strong thing on the next line about the news coming to Bavel, quotes the pasuk here, and it says, the Asu Yom Shmua Ki Yom Srefa. They were metaken that the day when they heard about it in Bavel would be as chamor as the day of the Srefa itself. And this definitely, I think, is surprising to us. It's one thing that you would commemorate the day when the siege was laid. Okay, that's bad news, but I don't know how bad. You're commemorating when you heard about it? That's definitely surprising. There are other events that in the history of the Jewish people have become connected to Asar B'Teves. The first is in Megillas Tanis from Bayis Sheni. It speaks about the 8th of Teves, when the Jews were forced by the Greek king to translate the Torah into Greek. And it brought darkness to the world for 3 days, meaning the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. So they're linked. We link between these in the Slichos, we say. This morning we said, Eskara Matzok Asher Karani, I remember the suffering that happened to me. B'shalosh Makot B'chodesh Azehikani. I was smitten by 3 blows in this month. What are the 3 blows? And for that I have a tinus. The siege, the news, and the death of Ezra HaSofer. So you see how Asar B'Teves became connected to a number of events that happened in that time period, around the 10th of Teves, in different years. And the question is, what brings them together? In recent Jewish history, there's another event that's been connected to Asar B'Teves, and that's the Holocaust. and the founding of the Jewish state in Israel. So the question became, how and when should we commemorate the Holocaust? So there were those who said, we should commemorate Tisha B'Av like all the other tragedies of the Jewish people. And others said, this is too great to just put into Tisha B'Av. There were secular Israelis who said, we should make its own day, on the day of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which was in Nisan. That's when Yom HaShoah was set. Why would you choose the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising? The real reason was because they wanted to celebrate the heroism and not the passive death of the Jewish people. Naturally, there were a lot of religious people who found that to be problematic. We should commemorate everybody, not just the fighters. And not in Chodesh Nisan, when it's the month of celebration, and not in making a new day. And the Rabbanut HaRashit of Eretz Yisrael decided that the Holocaust should be commemorated on Asar B'Teves. Which is why in religious circles in Israel, you'll see that Asar B'Teves, they have a Holocaust commemoration, which is why they're having this special lecture here this morning. And the obvious question is, what was the Rabbanut thinking? What's the connection between the Holocaust and Asar B'Teves? So I think in order to understand this a little bit more, we have to appreciate a little bit more what a siege, what happened in a siege, and what it signified. If we look at page 3, the Rambam writes, he's talking about each of the Taniot and what they signified. He gets to Asar B'Teves on the second line, he says, it was the day Melech Bava laid siege on Yerushalayim, v'heviya b'matzar u'v'matzok. What does the word matzar mean? Siege. The word matzok is the added word of the Rambam. Matzok means decimation and destruction. The siege is significant because of the decimation and destruction that it brings. May none of us ever have to suffer with this to appreciate it. If you look at the Psukim in Sefer Yechezkel, you see that it was not only a byproduct of the siege, but it was part of the goal of the siege. Part of the goal of the siege. Yud Zayin talks about how we're building the walls against Yerushalayim, the piles to block it in. L'hachrit nefeshot. In Yechezkel Perachof Aleph, when Melech Bavel is choosing which city to attack first, Amman or Yerushalayim, he talks about the goal. The goal is liftoach peh beretzach. Very strong pasuk. And this is why Hashem, in his prophecies to Yechezkel, the bottom of page 3, the two images used to describe the siege, to represent the siege, are pat, perek of dalet, and famine, perek dalet. The pat is that the walls of Yerushalayim are keeping all the food in and cooking, burning the people who are the food inside the pat. Not only to get cooked well, but to be totally burnt and decimated. And if you look at Perek Dalet, moving on to page 4, and it talks about the famine that comes with the siege, particularly Psukim Tes Zayin and Yud Zayin. Vayomer Elai Ben Adam, Hineni Shovera Matei Lechem B'Yerushalayim, V'Ochlu Lechem B'Mishkalu V'Deaga U'Mayim B'Msira V'Shimamon Yishtu. They'll have to ration the bread out of worry, and drink water very little out of thirst. Pasuk Yud Zayin, The Man Yachziru Lechem V'Mayim V'Neshamu Ish V'Achiv V'Namaku B'Avonam. People will be decimated and will wilt in their sins. So the siege is a terrible fate of suffering under terrible circumstances. The Rambam, I believe, though, got the word matzok and the combination of matzar u-matzok from Sefer Dvarim. Not just a stam perek in Sefer Dvarim, but from the Tochacha. If you look in the Tocha in Parsha Kitavo, it moves in stages. First, you're going to suffer in Eretz Yisrael and lose your wars and your economy is going to go down. But the worst stage begins in Pasuk Memtet. When Hashem will bring a goy from far away, as far as the eagle flies, who doesn't speak your language, who doesn't know you personally, so who can objectify you. And not only will he eat your food, but starting Pasuk Nunbet, he'll lay siege to you. And the siege here is described as causing not only for you not to have your food, but for you to eat your own children. But matzar uvimatzok asher yatzik lecha oivecha. What we're talking here is not just about suffering, but suffering that drives people to have to make decisions that are sickly. To be so desperate that, as the next psukim describe, even the most sensitive man amongst you, will turn against his own family and not share the meat of his own children with the rest of his family. Sick description. And the greater Chiddush, Pasuk Nun Vav, even the soft woman amongst you will keep the flesh of her children from her other children and her husband out of the terrible desperation that will set in. The Torah continues in the later Prokem of Devarim as describing what happens here as a sign of Hester Panim. God allows, orchestrates such terrible situations to arise to show us that He has separated Himself from us. In fact, the Gemara in Brachot sees this as the significance of one of the images that Yechezkel was told regarding the siege. If you look back on the bottom of page 3, Yechezkel was told to take a stone and to engrave on it a picture of the city of Yerushalayim. And then Pasuk Bet, to build a siege around that stone. And then Pasuk Gimel, and here comes the most important part, to take an iron pan and place it as an iron wall between Yechezkel and the model of the city that he built. What was the significance of this pan? The Gemara in Brachos, back on the bottom of page 4, Rabbi Elazar says, from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, an iron wall separates between the Jews and their Father in heaven. Shenemar v'yata kach lecha machvat barzel v'natato takir barzel v'incha v'ne'ir. The Gemara talks about this happening from the day of the Churban. But if you look at this pasuk in Yechezkel, you see it really begins with the siege. The siege doesn't only represent separation, it's physically separation, but it represents separation not only from the world outside, but from God who generally protects us. So the siege is about terrible suffering. It's symbolic of our God turning away from us. And also, interestingly, it's the beginning of the process of Golus. How do I know? Let's go back to Yechezkel on the top of page 4. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. It's talking here again about the siege. And Hashem says, Kocho yochlu v'nei Yisrael et lachmam tamei bagoyim asher adichem sham. So the Jewish people will eat their bread in a defiled state in the places that I send them out to. This term, bagoyim asher adichem sham, of course, is based on Dvarim Perek Lamed, bottom of page 4, which talks about how you'll be in the goyim asher hedicha Hashem elokecha sham. Yechezkel Perek Hei, back on the bottom of page 4, talks about how a third of the Jewish people will be killed in fire, a third in the siege, and a third taken out into Golus. Vashlishit tizrela ruach v'cherev arik achareihem, pursued by the sword. That's based on Vayikra Perek Chavav, which describes how v'etchem ezare bagoyim v'harikoti achareihem charev. Or in other words, the siege is already the seeds of Golus. That separation from God is already the basis of how the Jewish people are going to be separated from the confidence and security of the land of Israel. And I think all of this is the basis of what the Medrash Tanchuma says on the bottom of page 4, that the Jews should have been taken out to Golus on Asar B'Tevis. That's when they deserve to leave. But Hashem did them a favor. He didn't want them to have to travel, walk barefoot in the winter cold. Baruch Hashem, it's cold today, so we understand, right? So he waited till Tisha B'Av. So then when they went into Golus, they wouldn't be walking in the freezing weather. So again, you see, even when God punishes, He takes it to account. But the point I'm trying to show is, Asar B'Tevis is really the beginning of the season of the Golus. So what does all this mean? Remember, we saw earlier that Rabbi Shimon believed that why do we fast in the 10th month? Not because the siege on the city on the 10th of the month, but because of the day when the news got to Bavel. This makes a lot of sense on Asar B'Tevis because the siege is the beginning of what ends up happening to us in Golus. That's why Chazal throughout the generations connected the suffering of the Jewish people at the hands of nations in the state of Golus, even in Israel you can be in the state of Golus, as connected to this concept. The Greeks having power over us and being able to force us to translate the Torah into Greek. Ezra HaSofer, who was dealing with the Jews returning from Golus in this state of irreligiosity. All this begins with Asar B'Tevis. And of course, the Holocaust, which is the climax of everything that Golus was for the Jewish people for thousands of years, it begins on Asar B'Tevis. How? Why? It begins with the siege. It begins with what the siege symbolizes. It begins with the Jews being cut off. Cut off not only from the world, but cut off from their relationship with God. And this is a very, very important point. If you look at the Gemara on Rosh Hashanah, again, the sugya that deals with the Tanios, the Gemara there asks, when will the Tanios be days of celebration? And the Gemara says, when there'll be shalom. You know how much the Jewish people strive for shalom. When there'll be shalom, what does shalom mean? So if you look at Rashi and the Rambam, the Rashba, they talk about shalom meaning peace. What we call peace. The Goyim won't be ruling over us. The Yemos HaMashiach, which the Rambam says is when the Jews can live in peace. The Rashba says the return of the Jewish people to their land. And that's why there were those who suggested that today when the Jewish people are back in Israel, not controlled by the Goyim, maybe the Taniel shouldn't continue. Now you could say you're back in your land, but you're not living in peace. Okay. What's interesting though is that if you look at Rashi, Rashi mentions a second factor also. He says the Beis HaMikdash being rebuilt. And that's the factor Rabbeinu Chananel mentions. The Ritva, interestingly, mentions both together. So which one is it? Is Shalom living in peace? Or is Shalom having the Beit Mikdash? And that was the machlokas between the Rambam and the Tashbits about whether they were fasting in Bayis Sheni, because on the one hand they had the Beis HaMikdash, but they didn't have peace. The other nafkamina is today, where maybe we have some level of peace, but we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So what are these Tanios really about? I think today we've learned the hard way in the 20th century about what the relationship between the two things is. There is no people in the world that prays for peace and want peace and is willing to make sacrifices for peace like the Jewish people. There is no one who ever gave away land within their own place. The Jewish people really want peace. And I don't think there's a normal party in Israel that wouldn't be willing to do extreme things for peace. But peace eludes the Jewish people. It eludes us. No matter what we do, it backfires on us. And I think there's a reason. Peace with the world around us hinges on us having peace with Hashem. Until the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, there isn't going to be shalom. We should try for shalom, by the way. We should get as far as we can go. I'm not saying we shouldn't try for it. And we can get whatever level we get is worth it. The reason the Churban happened is because there was a problem between the Jews and God. If God would have just destroyed the Beit Mikdash and let the Jews live happily ever after in Israel, would anyone realize that they were missing something? You know why the siege and its suffering had to happen, and why the gullus had to happen, and all the things had to happen, was because only if we're suffering do we realize there's a problem. Jews have tried throughout the ages to find some way of living their lives normally in a way that they wouldn't suffer. Assimilation, Zionism, whatever it was. Only once people realize that the suffering is happening because there's a problem with our relationship with God and repair it, will the suffering stop. We should try and do whatever we can to alleviate it in the meantime. Chas v'shalom, we're not sadistic. But we need to realize that the siege is the beginning, and the siege is about that being cut off, that Chomat Barzel, that we have to care enough to want to break through in order to restore peace. I think it's interesting if you look at page 5, right? It's just reversed in the wrong order here. To see how the Jewish people can feel under siege living in the land of Israel. Those who follow what goes on in the international scene, it doesn't take much for Israel to get the whole world to condemn them. In fact, we don't have to do anything. The Commission for Human Rights in the United Nations has identified with 80% of its resolutions the biggest problem the world has as the way Israel is dealing with the Palestinians. On a day when Assad is firing Scud missiles at his own people and at Palestinians living in Syria, the biggest problem we have is that Israel is constructing in Jerusalem. I understand the world, and I'm not saying it's a small thing. Israel, Jews, ironically, back in their own land feel under siege. Because what was Herzl's idea? Herzl's idea, he wasn't a religious man. His idea was, if we get the Jews away from Europe, the Europeans will stop hating the Jews, and then we'll live on our own. This sense of being under siege, which is more than, again, can't compare, I'm not saying we're really under siege, Chas v'Shalom is not the same thing, but the sense of loneliness, the sense of feeling like You can't be free and comfortable in the world. It's something that can happen even in your own land. And that's the unique situation the Jews live in today in Israel. The panacea of returning to your own homeland hasn't solved the problem. The question is whether we can come to see what the real solution is and solve the problem. And I think that's a lot of what we need to reflect upon on Asar HaTevet. The day when it all began, when this separation began, the separation from many things. To think about where we've gone as a people since that Chomat Barzel, since that separation began. And what the way back to repairing it is. The Holocaust is a stage, a major stage, in the history of the Jewish people, particularly in the history of Galut. But it wasn't the end, unfortunately. The Jewish people haven't found the solution yet. And the question is for us to reflect on finding it. We'll speak about this more on Tuesday, and we need to end because there's the shiur about the Holocaust today. And I highly recommend people going to the shiur because it is the day when the Holocaust is meant to be commemorated, and we should definitely, we have what to commemorate about it. And afterwards, Sicha and Mincha, and then the tour around the wall. I don't know if people today are going to figure out and solve all the problems of the Jewish people around the world in the past, present, and future. Anyone who can, I encourage it. But one thing you can definitely do is to figure out how to take yourselves a step further. We're in yeshiva, this wonderful time, and we have to think about what are the parts of our day, what are the parts of our lives we have to sharpen a little bit, whether it's Musa Seder, or whether it's our relationship with Hashem. Do we daven properly in the place that we learn in the mornings? And it's natural when you're in yeshiva, things slip a little bit, get into a rut of doing things in a way that are not ideal. And days of reflection are days when we should think about how we should do things in the proper way. And I want to call out today to everybody from wherever they are to think each one on their own about what are the areas of their lives personally, of their days in yeshiva that they can sharpen. And we should begin with the beginning of the day. Those not davening in the yeshiva, we don't have many rules here. We have only expectations that people live as a Ben Torah and that people daven and learn full day in the yeshiva. Begins with Shachar, 7 o'clock in the morning. If you were in a yeshiva, if you were Shalayim, where there were no other minyanim, you would all be up for minyan, 7 o'clock. Chas v'shalom. Instead, you have the luxury of thinking you have other options, which means there are days when you don't daven with minyanim, or days when you daven in a minyan where you move from place to place within the minyan and daven 5 minutes here and 5 minutes and 5 minutes there, which is a wonderful way of making sure your tefillah ends up being a way of building a relationship with Hashem. In fact, the Gemara says that people were makbid to daven where they learned, even though there were 13 Batei Knesiot in Tveria, because that connection is what makes your learning part of your Avodat Hashem. And so, I've asked the Rebbeim and Rav Dan, the Shanabet staff, the Shana Aleph staff, to please help me in helping each of us make sure that we get back on track in that way, and other ways, whatever in our day, whether it's the beginning of morning Seder, which, by the way, is an afkamina of davening properly in a minyan, or whether it's Musa Seder, or whatever it is. And again, I don't want people to think the only thing that matters is Seder. Whatever in our lives, we need to sharpen and highlight the proper relationship with Hashem, Asar HaTevet is a wonderful way to do it. So the Sicha now in the Beit Midrash. Everyone should have a meaningful fast. After Mincha, we're meeting at the door for a tour around the walls. And after the tour, Akiva Buckman and Ariel Sheman will be doing a kumzitz at the broad wall to exit the Tainus properly. Because the Tainus should not be a day to go to sleep. It should be a day to reflect as much as possible on the themes of Tainus.